1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Phoenix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
Time once again for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill back with you. Thanks for coming along. 2 days in a row. Look at us. Oh, I'm getting used to this game action already. This is fantastic. Mariners in action yesterday. Of course, they'll be in action over the weekend. We'll talk about that coming up. I'll be in Arizona over the weekend, too, in Peoria. So if you're there, let me know. I'd love to say hi. So let me know if you're going to be in Arizona this weekend. Going to be a good weekend for it. I guess every weekend this time of year is a good weekend to be down there with great weather and great baseball being played. Talk about the schedule coming up over the weekend, but first let's get to the actual game action yesterday and one of the fantastic sounds of yesterday. I mean, right out of the gates, this has got to have Mariner fans just salivating for the season to start. I know we're ways away, but how good did this sound?
The 1-2 offer, swing and a high fly ball deep down the left field line. Heading toward the berm, this one is way out of here, and it's a fair ball. Goodbye, baseball. That was the only question. It hit a white tented area down the left field line. Nelson Cruz with his first home run in the Mariner uniform during the spring. A two-run shot, towering home run.
Yeah, the middle of the order was unbelievable. Nelson Cruz going yard there, smacking the home run. He had a couple of hits.
The stretch and the pitch, swinging a line drive right back up the middle into center field. Cano down at second base on a single by Cruz. That ball just jumped right off of his bat, and the Mariners have runners at first and second with two outs.
Not alone either. Not alone. Middle of the order, Cano, Seager.
Runners go. The pitch on the way. Swinging a ground ball back up the middle. Diving Amarista. Can't get to it. A base hit. Rounding third. Heading home is Cano. He'll score the throw to third. Cruz with a slide, and he's safe at third. So Kyle Seager on a 3-2 pitch with an RBI single. And the Mariners have a 1-0 lead here in the bottom of the first inning.
Yeah, you got to love the debut of the middle of the order, where they each pick up two hits, so 6 for 9 combined. Cano scores a couple of times. Cruz drives in a couple of runs. Seager drives in a run, a couple of hits. I mean, that's a way to start, right? I mean, not bad. Mariners pile up 9 runs, pound out 15 hits along the way as they win once again. They beat the Padres the second day in a row, 9-4. Over San Diego, but good stuff offensively, and man, you've got to love that. Little defense as well.
Here's the pitch. Myers takes off, a strike call, a throw down to third, and out at third base is Myers. A strike him out, throw him out, double play. Liriano caught looking at strike three. John Baker firing a strike down to Jody Lara. Danelle Myers trying to swipe third, and that will retire the side. What a throw by Baker.
Baker's a guy to watch, too. Backup catcher position is up there. Baker, he's an interesting guy. Left-handed hitter, which is, I think, is always a unique trait to have for a backup catcher and kind of nice to have. If you're going to give, you know, Zanino an off day, it'd be nice to, you know, you could spot it against a really tough righty, send the lefty up there. Veteran, a guy that's been around. Nice throw out there, but a guy that, I mean, he's going to be, you talk to him, he's going to be a manager someday or do something in baseball someday at a big level after his career is over. So thoughtful, so smart about how he goes about it, and so aware of his role and what he's going to do on this club or his role on the club. And a very interesting guy to talk to. I can't wait to hear more from him through the spring, but that should be another battle to watch, backup catcher role. But he's a very interesting candidate in camp. So the Mariners get the win. They win game two of spring. So far, so good. So here's what it looks like over the weekend, if you happen to be down there or not. Just want to know what's going on. Today, Mariners will take on the Dodgers on the road. It's going to be a 12:05 first pitch. Pacific time. Erasmo Ramirez will take the hill. He's going to go against David Huff, former UCLA Bruin, will take the start for the Dodgers. Saturday, split squads. They're going to play in Peoria against the Diamondbacks. I'm going to go to that one. 12:05 first pitch. Iwakuma will take the mound for the first time. And the rest of the squad is going to play against the White Sox. Hector Nwesi going to pitch for the White Sox in that one. Both 12:05 first pitches. And then on Sunday, they travel to take on Cincinnati. 1:05 first pitch. Daylight savings time ends, and Arizona doesn't budge. So you go from split times. Just if you're down there, be aware. Split times on Saturday, where there's a difference of 1 hour between here and Arizona, to just it's 1:05. We're on the same time starting on Sunday. Jay Happ is going to pitch against Cincinnati. 1:05 first pitch on Sunday. So that kind of lays it out what the next few days will look like, at least on the mound and the schedule down in Arizona. Of course, you can catch a lot of the action on 710 ESPN and on the flagship in Seattle. Oh, one more big piece of offense that I didn't get to that I meant to get to, and it's kind of a along the lines of something big that happened yesterday.
And the 1-0 swing and a high fly ball deep into the gap in left center field. Noel to the warning track, to the wall, looks up, goodbye baseball. Patrick Kevlehan with a three-run home run here in the bottom of the eighth inning, his first of the spring. And it's now the Mariners 8, the Padres 3. Folks, you're going to love this kid, Patrick Kevlehan.
Yeah, off to a great start this spring. Had the game-winning hit in the game yesterday and smacking the home run there. He's one to watch as well. So there it is, quick recap of the game yesterday. I just can't tell you how much I love having highlights again. Starting to get into work my way into the groove a little bit. So let's turn our attention now to a conversation with Nathan Bishop. You know him from lookoutlanding.com, and we talk all things Mariners, especially early here in the spring. It's finally happening. It's been a while. We've talked about it, but here he is. It's Nathan Bishop. He's the editor over at lookoutlanding.com. You can find him on Twitter at Nathan Bishop. He's an outstanding follow. I recommend it highly. Nathan, thanks for coming on. Certainly appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Gary. The impossible dream becomes a reality. I'm thrilled to be here.
No, we've talked about making this happen for a while, and I'm glad it finally is. This is the first of what I assume will be many visits. So here we are, a couple of days in the books, and boy, it's nice, even though it is just spring, but it's nice to see actual baseball, talk about actual baseball. So what's your impression now as spring training has started, camp has started, and games have started?
Well, it's hard to imagine the first two games going much more what I think probably Jack Cerenzik and Lloyd McLennan had in mind when they were going through the offseason making this roster up. The fans are seeing the contributions from the new guys right away. You get the big home run from Nelson Cruz today. Had Taiwan Walker looking great yesterday. And overall, the only real negative thing that we've got is the unfortunate injury to G-Man Choi yesterday. The cracked fibula, but other than that, I mean, it's hard to not be excited so far. I was saying on Twitter today, you know, it's a lot of people are going to tell you not be excited in spring when good things happen because it doesn't count, but there's plenty of reasons to not be excited about life. You might as well just grab a hold of the ones that you can find, and the Mariners have given us plenty the last couple of days.
I like that. I think I said at Nathan Bishop, but I mean at Nathan H. Bishop. Can't forget the H. B-I-S.
Don't forget the H. I do not claim Nathan Bishop's Twitter account at all.
Nice. Nathan H. Bishop. So there it is. That's the Twitter account to follow. So what's your now that spring training has started, what are you looking for in the early stages of spring training?
Well, the main thing you're always looking for, I always am most interested in the pitchers, how they're looking. You always look for those first week to 10 days for avoiding the guys coming into camp injured. You want to not hear things like what we heard from Yu Darvish today, leaving the game after, I think, 13 pitches with forearm or soreness or something like that. You want to see the pitchers get through those starts healthy, have everything look comfortable, free and easy. You saw that from Walker yesterday. Ronis Elias, his command wasn't great today, but seemed to be healthy, really not wanting to focus on results as much as we enjoy the good results of the last 2 days. We're more just looking for players to look healthy, to say they're healthy after they've gone out there, particularly those arms, because the Mariners could potentially go really far this year, but they're still not exceedingly deep, and you can never have too much healthy pitching. So we want that pitching to stay healthy all spring.
No, it's a great call. And it's funny, you look at the staff right now, and so many jobs are locked up, but there are some key roles available, including the back end of the rotation. You mentioned a couple of those candidates. How do you handicap the last couple of spots in the rotation?
You know, I think if the team could draw it up in a way that they want to see it go, I think they want somebody to earn that spot. I think they're hoping for Walker to get it. Walker is the most upside, the big prospect, the one that we've been hearing about for years. He's got the stuff. He's got the pedigree. He's got all of it there. He just needs to make it happen. So I think the team wants to see Walker win it, but I think he's going to have to fight it, because you've got somebody like Roenis Elias, who kind of came out of nowhere last year but flashed some really good stuff, was a huge part of holding this rotation together during some really tricky times in the middle of the year last year. Appears to be healthy from surgery in the offseason. So I think it's going to come down to those two. I think it's really going to be an open competition. I think if Lloyd had said coming into camp, I don't think it was specifically this position battle, but just referring to position battles in general, that he's going to consider spring training, but that won't be the only thing he considers. So this is going to play a factor here, and I think they want Walker to win it, but I don't think they're going to hand it to him. I think he's going to have to hold off Elias and maybe a couple other guys too. You know, if Erasmo Ramirez comes out of nowhere, I think that's a bit of a long shot, but I think it's going to be really interesting to see. I think that and the shortstop battle are the big things to keep an eye on this spring.
Yeah, no doubt. It's funny too. I mean, talk about good problems to have, is you're really only hashing out a couple of different spots in terms of the roster. And you mentioned a big one with shortstop. How do you break down how that is going to play out between Taylor and Miller?
Well, I think, again, you're looking at guys that are kind of playing different strengths there. You've got Brad Miller, who can make some really nice plays at shortstop, but his glove is more of a get-your-by kind of spot. The bat is what has been his calling card. That's been what got him to the major leagues. That's what he flashed such a potentially plus bat-to-bat position at the end of 2013. Really, really struggled at the beginning of last year in his first opening day assignment, but then picked it up, started to hit. Like a lot of the team seemed to kind of find his stride there in mid to late August into September. So that bat is really what you're going to look for Brad Miller. Chris Taylor, much more of a prototypical, that's your and mine's, that's our dad's shortstop there. That's 1980s. Nice. 1980s National League Baseball right there.
Yeah.
He's glove first. That bat's not terrible. It's not going to kill you, but he's got the range. He made some really, really eye-popping plays towards the end of last year playing shortstop. He's definitely got major league range. So that's going to be a tough one. I definitely think the spring is going to determine a lot there, but it also depends on what the team prioritizes, and that's hard to say. I'm not sure if they even know if they're going to go glove first or bat first at that position. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I think at this point it's wide open. I think if I personally had to pick, I think Brad Miller's got a little bit of an inside lead on it, just because the bat is so potentially useful at that position. But it's going to be a really interesting thing. It's amazing to see how much depth this team has seemingly overnight. I mean, we're talking 2-3 years removed from one of the thinnest major league rosters in baseball to a team that's got seemingly depth at multiple positions. It's a really good problem, like you said.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I there's guys that are capable of playing in the majors that aren't going to make the roster, and that's a good place to be, in a place they haven't been in the past few years. It's funny, too, you mentioned 80 shortstops. It feels like, just in Major League Baseball in general, we're kind of getting back to those days a little bit, just in terms of offenses and how teams are constructed. I always think I love the Cardinals teams from the 80s, you know, the Colemans and Ozzie Smith and Willie McGee. And I don't think teams are quite like that, with Jack Clark, the one slugger, and then all kinds of speed around. But it feels like we're in an era where speeds have become a little more important moving forward in terms of manufacturing runs. What do you think offense is going to look like the next few years? Are we getting back to those days a little bit?
I definitely think that we are. I think we're obviously seeing an effect from the the pushback against PEDs of the late 80s and early 2000s, and the drug testing has really picked up. We've seen a lot more scrutiny on that kind of thing. And the energy is leading back to baseball being played the way that it's been played for, I mean, we're talking a game with a history here of 150 years, and for about 130, 135 of it, it's been played within a fairly narrow parameter. I mean, there's been variations, and there's always big pickups and swoons in offense and defense, but we'd never really seen anything like the late mid-90s to for about a 10-year period there. And, you know, and I like it. I think that we're bringing it brings the whole varied skill sets of what players can bring. You have speed like James Jones and what we had with the Royals bringing guys off the bench through the playoffs last year. Just electric speed it almost seems like you can't stop it. And that not only does the diversity bring back some real joy in the glove first players and the leg first players, it makes guys with real power, the Giancarlo Stantons, the Nelson Cruzes, it makes them special again. And we grew up where guys that hit 30 home runs a year, that was a huge deal. I remember in 1995, Jay Buhner hit 27 home runs. I thought that was awesome. Yeah. 27 home runs. And then we had, you know, 3 or 4 years later, we have 30 or 40 guys hitting that many home runs in the major league. So it almost was overkill there. I like the home run as much as the next guy, but baseball is not a game just built about power. It's about being able to figure out what your strengths are. And there's a million different guys. I mean, baseball is great. You've got more diversity in the way a player can look than probably any sport. You've got your Bob Wells, you've got your Chris Taylors, you've got your Nelson Cruzes. I mean, it's a diverse game, and I'm thrilled to see the entire spectrum of human ability be more of a factor in the game these days.
You mentioned Nelson Cruz and his power, of course, swatting the 40 home runs last year.
Yeah.
I don't expect 40 again this year, certainly, but yeah, I was thinking about it in context. If he approaches what he was last year, thinking about that middle of the order between Cano, Cruz, and Seager, and it feels like you can put that three up against just about any three in baseball right now if Cruz is the guy near he was last year.
Yeah, I definitely think that Seager is a kind of guy that I've been thinking that Kyle Seager has peaked and reached the ceiling of his skill set every year that he's been in the major leagues. And I've looked back at his stats at the end of the year, and I think, well, that's a great year. That's probably his career year. He'll never repeat that. And then he goes out the next year, and he does better, and then he does better, and then he does better. And it just doesn't look like he should be able to continue to get better. But I'm through doubting him. He's turned himself into one of the best players in Major League Baseball all around. Robinson Cano is already there. And then you've got Nelson Cruz, and I think you're right. I think 40 home runs, that was an anomaly for him. He was playing in an amazing hitter's park out there in Baltimore. He had an amazing stretch of the early part of the year where it seemed like he was hitting a home run every other game. So 40 home runs, not necessarily realistic, but we're definitely thinking 30 is a possibility here. He's got the strength that plays in any ballpark. And one of the things that we've talked about at Lookout Landing is that Nelson Cruz doesn't have to hit 43 home runs to be an amazing upgrade to this team. This team for years, and especially last year, has had some of the worst performance at the designated hitter position in the American League. It's just been a black hole more often than not since Edgar Martinez retired. And if Nelson Cruz can be an average Nelson Cruz, what he's been over his career, we're looking at we like to use the WAR statistic over at Lookout Landing. We're looking at potentially a 4-5 win swing from what we had last year, and you put that into the win total from this year. From last year, and we can't do that. That's not how it works. But that is a huge upgrade to this team. Just having normal Nelson Cruz. We don't need last year's American Major League Baseball home run leader Nelson Cruz. Just, you know, 30 home runs will do fine.
Just run of the
or just
yeah. No, I'm right there.
30 of those we saw today. Get that curveball and hit it to the moon.
Well, yeah, and it wouldn't take much, obviously, to increase the production from last year at that spot. That's for sure. You mentioned Kyle Seager and his ceiling, because that is a question I've asked myself a lot. Like, where is his ceiling exactly? And he does. He continues to get better and better and seemingly raise that ceiling year after year. Where do you think that ceiling is? I mean, in his best year, what do you think Kyle Seager's numbers are going to look like?
Well, I think you're looking at a guy, he was a second baseman coming out of college, and it kind of felt like he was pushed towards third coming into the major leagues, more out of need than out of – he was going to kind of hold the place there until the second base position cleared up. Or he was moved to third because of Dustin Ackley, who was his college teammate. And so he ended up going to third base there. And through just kind of the story of Kyle Seager's career, apparently, we love those narratives of the hardworking guy that just puts his nose to the grindstone and keeps getting better and better. He's just turned himself into one of the best overall third basemen in the American League already. Yeah. His defense is, I will always swear that Adrian Beltre is the greatest defensive third baseman I've ever gotten a chance to watch. Kyle Seager's not far behind him at this point. He makes all of the plays. He may not have the rocket arm or that eye-popping range, but everything he gets, he charges that bunt better than I ever would have thought he'd be able to. He gets that throw off accurately. And his bat is just, he has figured out, he's never going to be a guy that hits 430-foot home runs. He has figured out that Griffey porch in right field, and he's built his swing around that, of just getting that ball into the air to right field and just popping home runs into the bleachers out there. And he's really, I don't know Kyle Seager, but it feels as though he's very capable of figuring out the places to attack the game. Safeco Field, it benefits left-handed power, so he built his game about pulling the home runs. And it just feels like if he puts it all together, if he keeps being the player he's going to be, he's a perennial all-star candidate every single year for the next 5 years. And then, you know, maybe in a career year and the Mariners are, cross your fingers, pushing for playoff contention, he's an MVP candidate. He may not be on this team because he's got so much big name star power that's going to compete with him, and Robinson Cano, and even Felix Hernandez could sneak into MVP consideration. But he's definitely an all-star third baseman. He's right there with Josh Donaldson's and a few other guys as the premier third baseman in the American League. And it's for a team that's really struggled ever since Alex Rodriguez to develop homegrown drafted position player talent, they've got one in Kyle Seager, and he is his contract extension was an extremely underratedly huge part of making this whole team come together. And he just, I couldn't be a bigger fan of the guy. We love him on the site. I love him personally. He's fantastic.
No, I'm right there with you. And I think you used the word underrated, and I still think that goes hand in hand with Kyle Seager as well. Despite the All-Star game last year, I don't think nationally people recognize that he has passed a lot of big names at third base in terms of production, you know, guys like Longoria and Beltre at this point. He's right there. If you were to rank third baseman right now, not only in the American League but in baseball, he's right there. He is right there in the top handful of best third baseman of baseball right now.
Top five, yeah. Top five in Major League Baseball. I totally agree with you. I think he's Longoria's defense is always going to be there, and he's not too old at this point. Beltre, you'd like to think, one would think, eventually will acknowledge that human beings age and his performance will start to drop off. I do love Adrian Beltre. Josh Donaldson, he was right there. I think Kyle had a better year last year than Josh Donaldson overall. It's something that as Mariner fans, we've waited a long time for a player like Kyle Seager. So, and he's definitely underrated. He's underrated not only nationally, he's underrated in Seattle. I think we kind of take him for granted. He has no one particular skill. He doesn't hit 330. He doesn't hit 35 home runs. His physical tools will never make your jaw drop. He's not particularly fast, but what he is absolutely one hell of a baseball player. There's no part of his game that he is not addressed and that he has not turned into a strength. He's getting everything out of his skills that he can possibly get. So we're really lucky to watch him.
No doubt. Okay, last question. And I'm kind of fascinated by this position battle, one we haven't talked about yet. The question is, two-part question. Will the Mariners take a second lefty into the season? And if they do, who's it going to be?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think they're going to take one. Okay. I think they're going to go with 7 men in the bullpen. I think if they haven't already acknowledged that publicly, they've definitely hinted that that's what they want to do. Joe Saunders, I'm not sure what they're going to do there. I think Charlie Furbush definitely seems like he's got the inside track on one of those spots. with a strong performance last year, and kind of seems like he's a pretty known entity at this point. One thing I've been thinking that the bullpen could use is, not only could it, if they're going to take a second left-hander, could they potentially use that second left-hander as also one of their longer relievers and kind of double up the usefulness there. Joe Saunders is a possibility there. Another possibility that we're kind of, or at least I'm kind of kicking over, is should Taiwan Walker end up winning that fifth man rotation battle, would they consider using Roenis Elias in that kind of role? Kind of seems like he's the kind of guy that if he's able to throw max effort 30 to 40 times, maybe 20 to 30 times, if he gets that fastball up to 94, 95, he could really be something out of the bullpen. I don't necessarily think that's what his career needs to be, but on a team like this, I think that's a possibility. And, you know, there's a ton of candidates. Every year we say the Mariners build a pile of relievers for spring training and they kind of let them duke it out. I think that position lends itself out to the spring training shakeout probably more than any in baseball for every team is, yeah. You know, they bring in a group of guys. It's so specialized. They see who's healthy. They see who's throwing well, they see who they like, and then they go there. But I definitely think it's a left hand. There's going to be two lefties. I don't. Two games in, Gary, I don't have a good feel for it at this point. So we'll give it a couple weeks.
Sounds good.
Let every pitcher actually throw on the roster before I start handicapping that.
Before you make the call, I know. I'm just fascinated by the battle. We'll watch it as it goes on. Nathan, this was fantastic. Yeah. I'm glad you came on, and we'll definitely do it again. Lookoutlanding.com. You know the site. It's a great one. At Nathan H. Bishop. Follow him on Twitter. He's outstanding. Nathan, thanks so much. We certainly appreciate the time. We'll do it again soon.
My pleasure, Gary. Thanks so much, man.
See you later!